Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 13th, 2020. University of Juba students protest the killing of their lecturer.
We need justice. We need justice. No more unknown gun.
We need justice. We need justice.
We need justice.
And an Anglican bishop forms his own church in Bor.
And it is really a new life in the ministry of the church, of Episcopal Church of Jonglei Internal Province. They have been really indicted in the new life, so people are so happy. As you can see now, now they will just go to the various places. The work has been done.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Dozens of University of Juba students today stage a peaceful march to protest the killing of a lecturer by men in police uniform on Sunday. University of Juba's College of Law lecturer Bol Chol was shot while returning to his house last night in Jebel Dinka residential area northwest of Juba. The students presented a petition to the parliament demanding Chol's killers face justice. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
We need justice! We need justice!
Under Juba's hot midday sun, more than 100 students chanted, "We need justice! We need justice!" as they marched to the National Legislative Assembly from the University of Juba campus. On the grounds of the National Legislative Assembly, the students continued to chant slogans and express their anger over Bol Chol's killing. Then a group of students stormed into a security meeting attended by Defense Minister Kwon Manyang and MPs. Denkur Mading, president of the University of Juba's School of Law Students Association, outlined the students' demands.
We call upon the government, or more particularly the parliament, to pressure the concerned authorities and to conduct a serious search and investigate this criminal act that ensued yesterday and resulted in the untimely and sudden loss of our lecturer. Condemn in strongest terms possible this unlawful and unnecessary killing of the law-abiding citizen who has dedicated his entire life to serving the nation and the people of South Sudan.
David Okwier Kwai, chairperson of the Security Committee of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, received the students' petition.
It's going to be taken and find out who committed this heinous act. We know when a unknown person shoots somebody or kills somebody, it is our responsibility as government to find out where is that criminal.
Yes.
It must be found out.
Yes.
So we will ask you to give us time to talk even to the Commissioner of Police and the IGP of Police, bring them to us here.
John Angweth Kenyi, chairperson of the School of Law Students Association, says his students need action, not just words.
We don't want a statement only to be met here. Then you go and sleep.
But tomorrow,
the death of Bol Chol should not be taken for granted like the other thing you take them for granted in the parliament. The death of Bol Chol should not be taken for granted like the other thing is you discuss in the parliament, then you go and sleep. Must be known, and we, the students of the School of Law, University of Juba, we must know who killed Bol Chol.
Kwai assured the students' authorities will follow up.
The death of our teacher will not just go in vain like that. We will take your papers. We will take your papers, and this will be raised now, given to the speaker behind us here, and he will take it to the leadership of the country.
Repeated calls to Brigadier General Daniel Justin, the spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, went unanswered. Bishop Gabriel Rorich, chief whip of other political parties at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, calls Chol's killing unacceptable.
Those who are producing the life of the people in the country are being just killed like that. This is unacceptable. The parliament, we must raise it and we must stand.
The students said in a statement they will give authorities 1 week to track down and arrest Chol's killers, or they will continue with protest in the streets of Juba. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Tehran, where Iranians protested on the streets of Tehran and other cities for the second straight day, following the Iranian government's admission that it shot down a Ukrainian airline passenger jet Wednesday, killing all 176 people on board. The government had previously insisted that allegations of a missile strike were Western propaganda. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Iran is facing growing pressure from abroad and at home, but it's not clear if the protest will develop into bigger anti-government demonstrations.
The protest began Saturday as mourners in Tehran turned their anger on Iran's rulers. The protesters returned Sunday in response to calls on social media, chanting resign and death to liars. Riot police were deployed in public squares across the capital. Videos posted on social media, which have not been independently verified by VOA, showed demonstrations spreading to the cities of Isfahan and Rasht. There appears to be widespread public anger at the government's initial attempt to deny responsibility for shooting down the plane. Zahra Razeghi is a resident of Tehran. She says, I can only say that the denial and covering up the truth over the past 3 days greatly added to the suffering and pain of the families. Saeed, also a resident of the capital, also voiced his anger. He said our media tried to describe the cause of the incident as a technical issue because of their interests and political reasons. But later developments changed the game and they had to tell the truth. Britain's ambassador was briefly arrested Saturday. He says he had been attending a vigil in memory of the crash victims, but left when the protest began. Pro-government protesters gathered outside the British embassy Sunday, demanding his expulsion, and the Iranian government summoned him Sunday for an explanation. Britain says his arrest was a violation of international law. US President Donald Trump tweeted support for the anti-government demonstrations and warned Tehran against what he called another massacre of peaceful protesters. Iran's Fars news agency said demonstrators had torn down posters of Qasem Soleimani, the general who was killed in a US drone strike over a week ago, triggering large anti-US protests. Iran responded to his death with missile strikes on two military bases used by American and Western forces in Iraq. Hours later, Iran accidentally shot down a Ukrainian airline's jet just after it took off from Tehran's airport. The commander-in-chief of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, General Hossein Salami, spoke to lawmakers in Parliament Sunday. He said, we were at war with America, and we still are. We are soldiers of this nation and devotees of this people. I swear to Almighty God that I wished I were in that plane and had crashed with them and had burned, but had not witnessed this tragic incident. Iran's government appears to be lurching from one crisis to the next. First, the US killing of its top general, and then growing global condemnation over its handling of the plane missile strike. Now, Iran is facing growing pressure from its own people. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In neighboring Kenya, police say suspected Al-Shabaab militants killed three teachers today in the second attack on a school in northeastern Kenya in as many weeks. Officials have withdrawn teachers from the main town of Garissa. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kenyan police say the teachers were killed when an unknown number of armed men attacked a school in Garissa County near the border with Somalia. Police spokesman Charles Owino says the militants also attacked a police post, but he says no officers were injured.
Today morning at about 0200 hours, armed attackers believed to be Al-Shabaab militia attacked Kamute Primary School next to Kamuthe police post, and they destroyed, they actually attempted to destroy a telecommunication mast, and they also murdered three teachers.
As police began a search for the attackers, Garissa County education officials, with the help of the national government, withdrew teachers from the schools perceived to be too dangerous. Khalif Sheikh Isaac is the Garissa County education chief.
The center was attacked. The market center was attacked, the entire market center. Police was banned, police camp. The Safaricom mask was also banned. Then they also attacked the school. They went and picked on non-Muslim teachers. And three were killed, one is injured. And the remaining teachers, we advised them to come to Garissa. So we picked most of them. All teachers in this county now are going to be assembled in Garissa for further advice and deployment elsewhere where there's security.
Hassan Omar is a member of the County Assembly of Garissa. His constituency falls under the area that came under attack.
The most safe place in Garissa County was this line, Bura district, the line, especially where most of the teachers were the previous thing to be transferred. Now, if it is that area has happened, now it shows nowhere safe in Garissa County.
On January 7th, at least four students were killed and four more injured when Al-Shabaab militants attacked another primary school in a remote village of the county. Security officers have been accused of not providing enough security to protect the teachers and the school. Garissa County Commissioner Meru Mwangi told VOA the government has not abandoned its people. He calls on locals to help the police with information.
It's unfortunate because they are dealing with the innocent locals, and we, as the government, we are inquiring and asking the members of the public to help and to assist the security agencies with information, so that these kind of activities can be reduced.
In just over a month, Al-Shabaab has been blamed for attacks that killed at least 23 people in Kenya, including an attack on a military base that killed three Americans. The militant group wants Kenyan troops to leave Somalia, where they are helping the Somali government maintain security and fight Al-Shabaab. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, NGOs in Nigeria are fighting the Boko Haram. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work. Making the baskets and doing more of the clay at work.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers, so for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice, so I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. In the far north region of Cameroon, NGOs are fighting Boko Haram recruitment by training young people and helping them to start their own businesses. Because of the insecurity due to Boko Haram attacks, the region has a youth unemployment rate sometimes closer to 90%, according to local authorities. At the same time, Boko Haram is recruiting these young people with promises to improve their living conditions. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Morwa, Cameroon.
20-year-old Barzare Umar says members of the Nigerian jihadist group Boko Haram attacked her village Amchide 2 years ago. They killed her mother and tried to recruit her. Barzai says Boko Haram members came to the neighborhood and told people that if they join them, they will give them money to go and work with them. Some of the unemployed Cameroonian youth in her village joined Boko Haram, but Omar refused. She had just started a job training program and says the hope of steady income gave her courage to reject the terrorist group. Analysts say Boko Haram's attacks on villages along Nigeria's border have crippled the local economy, increasing joblessness and making it easier for the militants to recruit. But charity groups like the Catholic Mission of Marwa are fighting back with job training centers for locals. Albert Daddy is a guide at the mission-funded Ozal Professional Training and Recycling Center. He says this schooling helps all of them. He says it encourages them to stay in the village. This is our village, says Daddy. We cannot leave our village to go into the bush. He says with this work, we can buy food and medicine. Cameroonian security expert Ntuda Ebode applauds the program's goal, but says they should be moved away from the border until the area is secured. He says it's not good to train them and leave them there in a context where recruitment continues.
Pour passer d'un pays à un autre.
Ebode says the distance to move from one country to another is too little. He says there is always a high risk that the trainees will find themselves caught again, either as a hostage or as a voluntary recruit. But charity coordinators maintain that improving the local economies is a major deterrent for Boko Haram's recruitment efforts and requires creating jobs locally. Local leaders agree and say they want to see more programs for skills training and job placement. Simone Awadak is president of the Association of Dynamic Young People for Development. He says they feel that charities have made efforts, but it is very low, both in terms of the selection process and the employment creation. Awadak says the efforts are so small. He says even funding from organizations is uncertain. Some young people got it, but there are many who do not. Over 400 villagers have so far received the job training since programs began in 2017 in Cameroon's far north region. For Anne Zwanke in Amchide, Cameroon, Moki, Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News.
From Yaounde, we move back to South Sudan, where a row is brewing between Archbishop Ruben Akur Diit of the Jonglei Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and the Primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. Last month, Archbishop Akur Diit unilaterally created three more dioceses in Jonglei without approval from a synod as per ECS rules. The ECSS hierarchy suspended Akur Diit, but the Archbishop enthroned three bishops last weekend. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
In a letter dated December 13, Primate Arama warned Akur Diit not to go ahead with the inauguration and consecration, which Arama said would bring division and confusion in the Church of God. Akur Diit accused Arama of being unfair. The Primate and Archbishop of the Juba Diocese issued an order withdrawing ecclesiastical powers for Archbishop Akur Diit and suspended him in hopes of heading off the consecration of the bishops. But Akur Diit defied the order and inaugurated the diocese of Makwach, Anyidi, and Chwaikir and consecrated the bishops. After the consecration, Akur Diit told reporters it was a great day for the Jonglei Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan.
It's really a new light in the ministry of the church, of Episcopal Church of Jonglei Internal Province. They have been really united in the new life, so people are so happy, as you can see now. Now they will just go to the various places the work has been done.
Asked why he defied orders of the primate, Akur Diit answered in Dinka, saying he cannot elaborate on administrative issues.
I don't want to speak about this in the media. These are our internal office issues, and I don't want to talk a lot in the media about it.
for their part. The newly consecrated bishops say they are grateful for their consecration. One of the bishops, Right Reverend David Guy Manyok, insists their consecration was in line with the laws of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan.
Because our bishop has a power of being bishop in his area. The seat was passed in the Diocese of Malek, and it was passed in the internal province of Jongle. So it has been passed in these two areas. So it is legal. Most of the dioceses that are now called dioceses gone through the way my dioceses came on.
Last month, 8 bishops from the Jongle internal province wrote a joint letter to Archbishop Akudit, telling him he had not followed the right procedures and distanced themselves from his actions. Bishop Ezekiel Dingajang of Twitch East Diocese criticized Akudit for his actions.
Well, he told that you wait, let it be done in the right way, and don't do that alone. Let it be done in according to the constitution of the 8 years. The constitution may mean that when there is a diocese recreated, it is the congregation are the one to report to the bishop, the diocese. And then the bishop of the diocese is to call the standing committee. And the standing committee have to call the general assembly of the diocese. When they are passed, they are taken to the province. And when there is a meeting of the province, how is a meeting of the province, then they are discussed there. Then they wait for the standing committee of the province. The standing committee of the province, then they pass them to the general assembly.
Bishop Ding says once it is passed by the General Assembly, the action is discussed by the province, and then there is more criteria to follow from the diocese and the office of the bishop. He says none of that was done. Several South Sudanese expressed their views about the row in social media. South Sudanese Philip Anyanghong says the church is becoming more human than spiritual and has decided to walk away from the church.
And as someone who has been in this denomination for the last close to over 30 years, I think it's the right time now to say that I'm moving out of this church. I want to just do my own thing. We've failed to take care of things. We just want peace of mind.
But Episcopal Church member Kur John Aleu has a different view.
I think Akudit is right to do what he has done. The three dioceses actually were approved by the outgoing primate. So what was just left was just the consideration. So whatever the case, the congregation of Anyidi and Makwashi and Shweki, they deserve to like have their own bishops. The full assessment was done, and they met all the conditions.
The primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan is currently in Jordan. Its press office says when the primate returns, an urgent meeting of the ECSS bishops across the country will be convened to address the dispute. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Chinese Foreign Affairs Minister is in Zimbabwe on a 3-day business visit in a nation where Chinese companies and government have invested huge sums of money in various sectors. Wang Yi, who arrived in the country on Saturday, is expected to hold bilateral talks with top Zimbabwean government officials and directors of the quasi-government firms in which the Chinese have business interests. ZANU FP Member of Parliament Ding Muzui Pat tells Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service that the Chinese foreign minister's visit is an indication that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government is trustworthy in terms of doing business in Zimbabwe.
It is a very commendable gesture that has been shown by China, but the President Xi Jinping has decided to send such a high-profile personality to come and, number one, follow up on the mega deals that Zimbabwe and China embarked on. Secondly, strengthen the diplomatic relations between these countries. Number three, strengthen the trade and related issues between Zimbabwe and China.
Zimbabwe has been talking about mega deals with China, and this includes a $1.1 billion Wange 7 and 8 expansion project. A new parliament, and then included in this is the $153 million Robert Mugabe International Airport facelift. But, you know, some of these deals, do they serve any purpose? Are they benefiting the local people?
To tell the truth, personally, I'm impressed with the priority areas that you've just mentioned. They indeed serve the people, because if we look at the power station, it is integral that it be a priority area, because we know that the economy here in Zimbabwe is based particularly on the efficiency of power system and supply. It means that if there be a way through which the Kariba hydropower station could be assisted by other alternatives, it will go a long way into assisting the economy, especially in the manufacturing and the industrial side of it. When we come to the parliament building, I'm a parliamentarian myself. I'll tell you that the 210 of us are struggling to squeeze into that small building. It therefore calls that there be a decongesting of a city and a decongestion of an administrative setup such as parliament. That includes, but is not limited to, the construction of this building.
Mm-hmm. While we see all this that you're saying happening around, you know, the president and all those kind of people, but the poor person, let's say in Mbare, what is it benefiting out of this? There's no food on the table that is coming to him. So what are the direct benefits to local people?
Our engagement with China and the subsequent visit of the foreign affairs minister is not a panacea to all our social and economic problems.
That was Dingu Muzipathi, a ZANU FP member of parliament. He was speaking with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. That brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Celebrate by Isaka Number One.
Isaka Number One. Celebrate South Sudan Independence Day.
Celebrate,
celebrate.
My South Sudan, celebrate.
My
South Sudan, celebrate.
Celebrate.
My South Sudan, celebrate.
My
South Sudan.
Arfa alam da Junub Sudan. Arfa alam da Dinafo. Nezil alam da Sudan Gedim. Arfa alam da Sudan jadi, arfa alam da Junub Sudan, celebrate. Oh, 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 oh,
celebrate,
celebrate.
My Junub Sudan, celebrate.
Masao
Sudan, Masao Sudan, celebrate,
celebrate.
My Junub Sudan, celebrate.
Masao
Sudan, Masao Sudan.
Celebrate South Sudan Independence Day. Jibu Arabia, Sikabele Fata. Wenu Molodo, Kelena Sikuruju. Dubu Ndugara, Kelenina Alabu. Arale Abuba, Asha Nasmagisa. Tazaman. Oh, oh, oh.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Celebrate. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us this evening. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sudan.